Welcome to the Wild Adventures podcast, the podcast where we get to hear people's life stories and see where they have identified adventure in their life. My hope for you as a listener is that you come away from this podcast inspired to make every day an adventure. I am your endlessly curious host, Marlene Lowe, and my passion is in hearing and collecting your stories. This week's episode is with Stacey Copeland, professional athlete, public speaker, radio presenter, and Pave the Way founder. Needless to say, I was starstruck and nervous when it came to interviewing Stacey. She's a powerful force to be reckoned with and passionate about being the example that she didn't have growing up. You can't help but be inspired by her tenacity and passion for equality and the power of sports. Enjoy today's episode.
Okay. Well, I had, as you know, two things that I really loved as a kid, which were football and boxing. I don't know why I loved football, because nobody in my family is really any good at football at all. But I just loved it. And at playtime or recess, when we'd go out onto the playground, all the girls, I had a lot of girls who were mates, but they were just doing stuff I just wasn't interested in. So they were doing like making things out of elastic bands, hopscotch, having weddings, just wasn't interested in any of that at all. And all of the boys pretty much playing football, and that's where I wanted to be and what I wanted to be doing. So I did. That's what I was doing pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
And then I got a chance to go to the team training session, and it eventually got picked for the team. In boxing, it's a lot more obvious, my pathway, because my dad was a boxer. My granddad ran our boxing gym. So, you know, there was obvious influences there, and they got me interested in it from an early age. As to why I loved it, though, because you can take someone in the gym and it just doesn't do anything for them. But for me, it certainly did. I just loved it straight away. So any chance to either like mess about with my dad, like sparring and getting the gloves on, or going to the gym, watching boxing, going to the shows, anything to do with boxing or football, I just always wanted to do it. I just loved both sports from very early on.
I loved hearing your journey about not being allowed to do the sports. How did it feel when finally you were allowed to? It seems like a silly question, I suppose, but what was that like, being able to now do what it was that you loved and being part of that community?
Well, I think I had a few times where I thought that's what had happened and it wasn't. So for example, the first time I got to play for my school team, because they didn't, the Football Association, even though the ban on women's football in this country was lifted in 71, the Football Association didn't get involved until the early 90s. So you weren't allowed to play with the boys, but there wasn't a structure for girls. So you were just kind of stuck, really. So I went to play for the school team. I didn't think anything of it until the parent and coach on the other team shouted across the pitch and made me leave the pitch. And as I said, I didn't know how to describe those feelings as a seven-year-old, but now I know what they were. You know, I felt humiliated, I felt ashamed, I felt like I was doing something wrong. But it didn't stop me. And I know it does a lot of young people, boys and girls, the stigma that they're faced for doing something that goes against gender stereotypes, and they just give up on things that they're passionate about. And that's awful. It's still happening now. But I didn't, I went home and I said, right, Mum, I'm going to have to cut my hair short. And so obviously I could pretend to be a boy and play. So there were a few times when I thought, this is it, like everything's opening up, and then a door shut, closed. So same in boxing, you know, I did everything that all the lads did. Went to the shows, did all the circuit training, just loved it. Every single minute I loved. And then when we went to my granddad and asked about starting to box, he said, he told me that I couldn't because it was illegal for girls. And again, it was just a massive, I don't really have the words to describe it, because I was a kid, but it was a sucker punch. You know, where that thing that you feel deep inside that you're like, phew. And it was starting to become quite apparent to me that my gender was going to be a real barrier when it comes to me doing the things that I wanted to do. So in answer to your question, if it's just in terms of being able to do it, there were, you know, a couple of moments where that stand out. So getting to play football for my country, getting to go to America and Sweden and play football, which I'd always wanted to do, and seeing what women's football is like in America and Sweden, very different to here. And it was years ahead of us at the time. So that was a brilliant thing to see, like what I knew women's football could be with investment and support. And that's what they were getting. So that was good. And like a real, you know, like that moment of arrival, if you like, where you're like, oh yeah, this is how I thought it could be, but actually seeing it. And then in boxing, certainly standing on the podium for the European Championships with the silver medal, that was just that was just a massive moment for me, thinking, my God, like I couldn't even do this sport. And similarly, when I made my pro debut, coming out as an actual professional boxer into that arena was like unbelievable. So there were those moments, but in terms of thinking, yes, we've arrived, it's all done, that's yet to happen.
Do you still feel that you face those stigmas, even with your career and how known you are within football and boxing and overall? Do you still face those stigmas for yourself?
Definitely, 100%. You know, it's only in the last few weeks that I've been sharing different things, like everybody does. I was particularly outspoken about all of these headlines I kept reading that women's sport was going to be lost and disappear and lose all its momentum after COVID. And I just don't agree with that. For one, I think it's language is, in my opinion, really, really important. Yeah. And using language like that sends out a strong message. It sends a message to potential investors, corporate sponsors, commercial partners that don't invest in this, it's going nowhere. Yeah. It sends a message to governing bodies that, yes, you can forget us with the other. But most importantly, to me, it sends a message to little boys and girls, and particularly girls who've got aspirations, what we're saying to them. Yeah. There's going to be for you. That's no good. That's not good enough. So I was outspoken on that. And, you know, majority of the feedbacks or response, I should say, was positive. But then there was things like, why don't you stop complaining and go and make me an effing sandwich? Oh. On Twitter, which it's still being used as a kind of put down now, that this be in the kitchen thing, and it's pathetic really, but it's still aggravating that that's something that, and obviously there's a lot of nasty things said on Twitter to loads of sorts of people, I know that, but when it's sexist or racist, it's different. That hate kind of speech is different, and they're weaponizing that language, and I don't mean weaponizing as in, you know, like a weapon, but you know what I mean? They're using it deliberately.
Yeah, it's like degradation.
Put down. Yeah. Absolutely. And it doesn't matter what you do, you see. It doesn't matter if you're a fantastic female footballer or if you're a fantastic male footballer. Mm. You know, if you're a fantastic black male footballer or a fantastic female footballer, if they're going to make it about your race or your gender, you can't respond to that. Or, you know, just a put down of something that runs deep, that's historical, that's, you know, runs through your blood of a sense of injustice, and that makes it very frustrating, to be honest. It's not the same as just somebody saying some random flippant comment. It's they know exactly what that connotation is, and it's frustrating,
especially when it's something that you fundamentally can't change. It's not something you can work on, it's not something that you can become better at. It's who you are intrinsically, and to have someone kind of turn you away because of something you can't help, it's hurtful,
and it also gives strange, like a strange misplaced power to somebody. So you can be an absolute nobody who hasn't really achieved anything, who's never spoken up, who's never had the courage to put himself out there, because as a boxer you put yourself out there to be judged, and literally judged by the judges at ringside, but by everybody else as well. You put yourself up there to try and win a title or a tournament and represent your country. There's a lot that can go wrong. There's a lot that's scary about that for a human. You can be, you know, beaten, you can be humiliated, you can, all sorts of things can happen. Yeah. Let alone speaking out on things you're passionate about when you know there's a load of people aren't going to disagree. Those people may never have done that, and yet they can use one thing against you, no matter what you've achieved, about something like, say, race or gender, and that's I don't know, it's just a bit sickening, really.
It's always fascinated me in the wrong way, made me upset, because when you do look at female athletes and counter them to their male ones, and I don't mean this in a derogatory towards the males, but the females tend to be, dare I say it, more badass. They've got that tenacious attitude, maybe because of the stigmas around it and the attitudes that you have to encounter. But for me, the female athletes are the ones that really show their strength because they keep going. They don't stop despite having all of those words chucked at them on a daily basis.
Also, the things that a lot of female athletes stand up for, and I don't know, like you say, if it's because we've had a lot to overcome, even just to, you know, be on the field of play. I mean, we've been banned from every sport ever at different stages, and we've had ridiculous stigmas like not being allowed to do stuff because, you know, we'll die or our bodies won't cope or uterus will fall out and all this ridiculous stuff. So we've come up against all that. And I also think it's not lost on most female athletes that they want to pave a way for the next generation. It's something that seems inherently important to us, and whether that eventually would change. Let's say if bags and bags of money came into all of women's sport and we were very out of touch like some of the male athletes are, to be honest, which isn't necessarily their fault, but I don't know. I think and there's now, and I mean, we are seeing now more male athletes than ever speaking up, particularly since Black Lives Matter, which is really important. But the WNBA, you know, those women have been speaking out about this for a long time, and the men have got involved, and it's become bigger, and it will do because they've got a bigger following, they've got a, you know, bigger sponsorships, more money involved, whatever. But actually, women have been speaking out on many, many things for a long time, and perhaps part of that is that we don't stand to lose million deal. Because I mean, they criticised Michael Jordan, didn't they?
Yeah.
Years ago, saying, you know, he should have said this and that. Well, that's easy to say if you're not the person whose entire livelihood depends on that, and he could have made that decision. We weren't in the era that we're in now, where, you know, it's actually become more of a thing to stay silent than it is to say something, which is a good thing. That wasn't like that back then. He could have all of his commercial sponsorship deals and everything, and that's a lot to put on someone. So, you know, perhaps when there's more at stake, it's more difficult to speak out. Who knows? But there's very few female athletes in that position. Mm. So hopefully if more money comes into it, which it will, it'll remain the same. And you've only to look at Naomi Osaka, Serena Williams and so on, Coco Gauff, who've got money, you know, I mean, they're, you know, earning big money in women's sport, and they're still choosing to use their voice. So hopefully that's not going to change for female athletes going forward.
I like what you say there about pave the way, but what I really like about your concept around pave the way is the fact that you said, I hope that one day it's not needed.
Yeah. The premise is that, you know, gender stereotypes should never be a barrier to human potential, and it's about both genders because boys and males face stigma too. So if you talk about stigma, then there's things that are deemed or considered to go against masculinity, like boys doing ballet or whatever. Well, that's ridiculous, because they can be fabulous at ballet, and why not? If they love it and they're good at it. Then we still have kids giving up now because they're getting picked on, same as we do for girls with certain things. And then in a different way, because, you know, a kind of knock-on, if you like, effect of stereotypes is that we're very underrepresented, women, in certain industries, but men are too. You know, very few primary school teachers are male, social carers, youth workers and so on. And actually, men are great at nurturing and caring roles, but they're just taught that they shouldn't be, or they're not, and that's not true. So I think a balance in across all industries is great. And more importantly, if somebody's got a real passion for something, we just want them to be able to pursue it, don't we? And that's what it's about.
Do you feel like you've seen a change? Obviously, you've seen lots of changes throughout your lifetime on things changing, but have you seen a change more recently going towards that equality and true equality, as opposed to verbally saying things are becoming equality or equal?
I think so, yeah. No, I definitely think there has been. I think what's also happened is a big backlash as well. So people who just don't want to hear anything about women, you know, women's issues, women's rights, however you want to phrase it, they just don't want to hear it. Feel it's too much, you know, and there's a big backlash from that as well of people who just really, really like, you know, so that's the opposite side to that, I guess, so the consequence of that. Yeah. But on the positive side, I think there's been massive changes. Yeah, I mean, we're seeing in women's sport, it's phenomenal, the changes that, you only have to look at things like the World Cup that, you know, when I first went to play for England and went to see my boss to ask if I could have the week off, he just laughed his head off. And he was like, you want me to give you a week off to play for a women's football team? I was like, but it is the England women's football team. So look, it really means a lot to me. Can I just take it unpaid? Mm-hmm. And he just made a load of jokes and like whatever. And I just walked out of there feeling really stupid, really small, feeling silly for thinking it was such a big deal to play, not for the England team, but for the England women's team. Yeah. Different in my mind, because that's what I'd been taught. So I know that happens. I've spent many years trying to unlearn all of that stuff. And I have now. And it's the biggest lie we've ever been told, that women aren't good at sport or women aren't good at this, that and the other. But you do have to unlearn that, because we do. We're not necessarily taught that directly, but we pick it up. We acquire that knowledge because those are the messages that we get in a gazillion different ways, verbally, in terms of actions, in terms of what's shown on TV, what isn't, who's respected, who isn't. Loads and loads of reasons, the opportunities we have or don't, compared to male counterparts. So, yeah, I think it's much, much better. But there is a backlash, and I think that's something we have to think about sometimes as well, in terms of how we approach the progress, because it's never linear. It's always very, very difficult, but it does always require action. Yeah. And it does always require you to do it despite people disagreeing with you, complaining about it, or getting pissed off with, you know, people trying to bring about change. Yeah. You've got to do it despite them. You have to. You'd love to have them on board, but, you know.
Do you think we'll see that change in our lifetime?
It depends what change, doesn't it? I mean, it depends what change you mean, I guess.
Sports, let's say females getting that recognition within sports and having the same gravitas to their careers as men have.
Yeah, I think it'll happen, definitely. I think social change has kind of stages, which start generally with ridicule, where because it's different and by virtue of change, it is something that's, you know, not the norm, something that's happened differently. It often is met with ridicule. Yeah. So women doing sports, and we're still in that phase because there's still a lot of people who haven't properly seen women's sport, or have always thought for years we shouldn't be doing it, or whatever their preconceived ideas are. So there's ridicule, but then discussion is usually the next phase, where people start to say, oh, well, have you seen them though? Some of them are all right. And it kind of starts like that. And then all the way to acceptance, there can be 100 years between each phase of that. And it doesn't all happen at once. Yeah. It may have started to happen more in women's basketball, women's football, but then there'll be other sports, not so much. A lot of that depends around the governing bodies, commercial partners and so on. Because when we talk about stuff like equal pay, I think sometimes people focus too much on the money in the athlete's pocket. And yes, there's a certain element of importance for that. But to an athlete, you know, these athletes that are now running, throwing, jumping faster than ever before, it's not because they've got more money in the back pocket than people did years ago. Yeah. It's because of the investment in sports science, which is largely has been based on men. Yeah. Research around men, as we know, and there's more and more research going to be done around women now because our bodies are different. Yeah. So we'll get better and better. But when we talk about equal money as opposed to equal pay, that's when you're talking about the bigger picture. So let's say if you've got two football teams, a male and a female football team, even if you just gave those female players a bunch of money, it doesn't necessarily mean that the game is going to progress overnight. What we would need to have is parity in terms of facilities. So an excellent pitch to play on every single day, rather than a bobbly crap pitch like we used to play on. You know, we try and get anywhere we could. Players being able to live close by, whereas, you know, me and my mate, who was she was our goalkeeper, lived in Manchester, and we had to travel all the way to Doncaster three times a week, which was a 2-hour journey after a full day at work and a 2-hour journey home and training in the middle of it. It's extremely tiring. How can you be at your very best when you've been at work all day? You have a 2-hour drive, train, and 2-hour drive home three times a week. So being able to live near the ground and dedicate yourself to it, having great nutritionists, physiotherapists, you know, the best recovery stuff in the world, strength and conditioning coaches. Once you start looking at all of that, I've not even talked about coaching yet, then you start to see, that's what makes players 10 times better, the sports science, but that takes investment. So it's not just about the money in a player's pocket. It's about giving them the investment with which for them to then reach their full potential.
So obviously, you know that women are fighting hard for this to happen. And this is a bit of a difficult question, I suppose, but where does the responsibility lie to make sure that this happens?
With everybody, you know, with any type of, because really what we're talking about with women's sport is society. Mm. You know, people sometimes say to me, how can we get more girls into boxing? I'm not necessarily bothered about girls doing boxing. Like, it's not for everybody. Yeah. Not everybody even likes the sport, and I totally understand why. It's about having the opportunity to do that, knowing that you can. But getting girls into sport generally, yes, I definitely want to be part of that. Not, it doesn't have to be boxing, it can be any sport, because we know that sport is one of the most powerful things on the planet for bringing about change, and what happens in sport manifests in other parts of society, as we know, with Black Lives Matter, with Pride, with, you know, whatever it is, Paralympics, it's phenomenal the impact that can have on those groups and wider groups. So sport's important because it's reflective of society. It's like a microcosm of society, so that's why it's important. And I think the more we can do, the more impact it can have in other places. And like I say, you know, you've got to think, if you're a child with a disability, watching Paralympians be phenomenal at what they do, that's you know, inspirational. And it's different to watching able-bodied athletes. If you're, you know, a young Black kid and you're watching these incredible male and female role models, when you're hearing all these messages that are, and you're like, no, they're, you know, incredible role models. And then with women, exactly the same thing, that, you know, you can see women that there's not much like the raw emotion of sport, where it's all happening in real time, right in front of you. Despite all the amazing technology we've got, we still have an underdog and somebody who can surprise us on the day. We still have unpredictability and incredible things happening right in front of your eyes. And it's just human beings being amazing. But that simplicity is a fantastic thing. And so to see yourself, whether that's a woman, a person with disability, a Black, brown person, whatever is reflective of you, being amazing, that's really impactful, I think, and for general society. So I think it is really, really important that we push as much as we can. But really, it's about the wider society. And I think it's just important for it's everyone's responsibility, because Black Lives Matter is everybody's responsibility. Yeah. It can't just be on Black people to make, how can they, when they're, we've clearly made it quite apparent that you know, that there are so many few Black people in positions of power. So how can it be possible? Women, we've got very few positions of power. So how can it just be down to us? Definitely. We all need to be allies to one another. Because what's better for someone else is better for all of us. I don't agree that, you know, someone has to lose out. We don't lose out as white people if things are better for Black people, I don't think. You know, it's much better for everybody, surely. So I think it's everyone's responsibility, because it makes society better.
So tell me about Pave the Way, because that's really a chance to get children when they're young and teach them from the start that everything is okay. You can do exactly what you want to do.
So Pave the Way started, it was only going to be for 1 week. It started in 2017, just after my pro debut. And I'd already been doing quite a few, like, you know, girls empowerment things. It was just focused around girls at the time. I'd done a few boys empowerment days as well, for International Men's Day, for example. When I started boxing, my nickname is SpongeBob SquarePants to my friends. But because when I get injured and put weight on, I just turn into a massive square sponge. So I knew I couldn't have that as my boxing nickname. Yeah. But I decided to go with something that I stood for, which was paving the way. I don't know where that phrase came from. Obviously, it's a pre-existing phrase, but how it came to feel so right, I don't know. So I had it on my kit and stuff like that, and then we decided to do a project around it. So we visited loads of schools, community groups, and we did a photography exhibition of women who work in sport, which is on display at the Velodrome. So we did all stuff like that, and we did an inspiration day for girls who are into sport, whatever. It was ace. It was just really good. And thought, oh, brilliant, nice, move on. And then people just started using the hashtag, and it resonated with them, and I thought, maybe we should do something with this. Yeah. So it's been just a self-funded project for the last 3 years, where we've done like loads of inspiration days and other exhibitions and school visits and stuff. But it's now about both genders, mm-hmm. because, you know, if it's not all right for girls, then it's not all right for boys either. And if boys should be able to go and do singing and ballet and choirs or whatever they want without facing stigma. And it's also about more than sport, because by doing so much public speaking, it's just so blatantly obvious that many, many women have had my experience in that they've faced lots of barriers in tech, construction, law, you name it. And like I say, men are underrepresented in some industries too. So, and then if we look at the home, and this is precisely what I mean by it's everyone's responsibility, because you see, if things are better for women, it makes things better for men. So if you're in a household where there's male and female, which now obviously there's loads and loads of same-sex couples, but there's a lot of obviously heterosexual couples as well. If you make things better, like, you know, pay or maternity conditions for women, men benefit from that when they live with us. If they don't, if you're in two men or two women couple, then it benefits both of you anyway. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? In the sense that, if we give equal paternity rights to men, if they're a same-sex couple and they have a baby, they're going to benefit from that. Yeah. But also, if they've got a female partner, they're going to benefit from that. And there are a lot of ways, I think, that we, because we focus a lot on making things better for women, as we should, because there's a long history of it, and it's really, really, really serious. With there's a very serious level of it for men and women. You know, when we talk about all this in pockets of sport or industry or equal pay, each one on its own might not seem that significant, but actually in its totality, the real upshot at the extreme level of not doing better is that because we have this stigma around masculinity of what you should be as a man, the real problem is the rate of suicide that we've got and depression. Yeah. When men are not allowed to be anything other than that little lane we put them in. That's the real problem. In terms of not valuing women at the other extreme, is two women a week are still killed by a current or former partner. So yes, we can talk in bits, but actually there's a super serious element to what actually happens at the extreme level when we don't value women and we don't let men out of that masculine box. It's not healthy for any of us.
So with Pave the Way, what can people do to get involved in their local communities?
We've only just got charity status during lockdown, so we're like right at the beginning, so we're literally just setting up a bank account. I'm really fortunate that my sister works in marketing, so she's been able to help me a bunch, and she's done some amazing work with myself and the trustees. And so for the next, up until Christmas, we've got like all these workshops planned where we're going to work really hard on getting the wording right, how we want to present our brand, if you like, you know, what Pave the Way will be, and starting to think about how we're going to do and achieve what we want to achieve. So I think the ways that people can help is, eventually we'll be able to donate, but to be honest, it's more that what they can help us with what we're building at the minute. So people with experience of writing funding bids, people with experience in financing, you know, business planning, anything really that's business or charity related that could lend itself to helping us set up is really helpful. And I think if you get people who are passionate about it and get it, it's much, much better than having to approach people And so, you know, I think really Pave the Way is a community. It's going to be a community. Anyway, that's the idea of it. Yeah. So eventually we'll have things that we want people to get involved with, but they're just ideas at this stage.
Well, if anyone can do it, it's you. So I wanted to ask one thing as well. Because you're so tenacious, and you like, when I get the impression that once you decide something's going to happen, it's going to happen. Is that something that you learned through your family, or is it something you think you had intrinsically already?
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest, because if you think about when I got asked to leave the pitch, my instinct was not to just give up for whatever reason. And I still felt bad. It wasn't like it didn't strike me that was a bit awful. Yeah. I felt it. And yet my whole thing was go home, get my hair cut short. I'll be back here next week, you know, pretending to be a boy and playing in that game. Who knows where that comes from? But what I will say is that has been developed over the years through experiences and learning from them, having great people around me who've helped guide me, educating myself as much as possible, like reading a lot, listening to other people a lot, you know, watching talks and just trying to learn from how to deal with, you know, adversity, how to separate myself from my sport and it not be my entire identity and have value and worth outside of it, all sorts of things like that, which can only come really from the experience of going through it. So I think there's a bit of both. And I think that the two stories that really show it for me was the one when I was 16 and my boss laughed at me when he asked for a week off, and I didn't say a word. And, you know, I walked out feeling, as I've explained, really ashamed, really, to think it was such a big deal to play for the England women's football team. And I didn't even tell anyone that I was going to play in that tournament. It impacted me. Even when I was listening to the anthem, I was thinking, but it's not the England football team. What an idiot for thinking it was. That was me. 20 years later, when I had the situation when I won the Commonwealth title, and it's an amazing experience going to Zimbabwe and becoming the first British woman to win it, but then not getting a belt, was awful. And the worst bit was at the airport when everyone was so excited to see this belt, and I hadn't had the heart to tell them there wasn't one, but I didn't know they were all going to be surprised me at the airport. And it was so heartbreaking not having that moment with them, with all the people I love and who followed me and supported me. It was just horrible. Yeah. And then to ring the Commonwealth Boxing Council and be told, you know, that they do replica belts for women and they've stopped producing them, And then I asked them how quickly I could have a real one. And then they said, you know, you can have a real one within a couple of weeks, but they're quite expensive. So unless you've got a sugar daddy, you probably won't be able to have one. I was a very different person by then.
Yeah.
Very different. And instead of feeling bad, internalizing it, I actually thought, you know, this has happened to me for a reason. Mm. But the reason I worked out was very different to the one as a 16-year-old. As a 16-year-old, the reason was that I wasn't as good as, that women were not as good as, that I was an idiot. Fancy thinking this, how stupid was I to think it was a big deal? It's just the women's team. That was the reason in my head then. Mm. 20 years later, the reason was, this has happened to me because I'm the person who's going to do something about it. And I now have equipped myself with a little toolkit, if you like, with which to challenge and address these things, because I now understand where these ridiculous ideas, myths, stereotypes have come from. I'm either still here, and I know that I'm, you know, I was the right person for that to happen to, because it was me that needed to change it. So very different in that span of time.
Yeah. When I saw the clip, one actually, did you ever buy the belt?
The promoter bought it for me.
Good. Good, because when I saw that clip of you winning, I got so many goosebumps and teared up, because I'm from Zimbabwe as well, so it was just like extra special. I was like, I'm still getting goosebumps.
I looked at that. The people were just amazing. It was just the whole thing was. I mean, visited the schools that we visited and stuff. I just loved it. I just thought it was absolutely the most amazing experience. I loved it.
Did you feel that the culture there around women in sports was different, or did you feel they faced the same stigmas that we do here?
I was only there a week. So it'd be really difficult to say, to be honest. I mean, the little bubble that I was in, I wasn't treated any different, and everyone was really, really excited about the fight. I got booed when I came in, which I think was that's good, because it's you being treated the same. Yeah. But then cheering when I went out, which was really lovely. Yeah. And then, like, you know, loads of people from Harare and around there were coming up after and wanting photos and all that, and that was really lovely. Yeah. So they totally, you know, greeted me with loads of warmth, and they were very welcoming and dead nice after the fight and stuff. Yeah. So that's all I've got to go off, really. There was nothing that jumped out at me, and which I guess, like I said, I was only there a week, and it was just a wonderful experience.
You speak about role models in some of your talks, and I find it really interesting, because when it comes to boxing, I was very fortunate to have a family friend who's from Zambia, who's a boxer in Sweden. And so she took me under her wing, and I got to learn boxing from her, and it was fantastic. And I was lucky that the guys in the gym were pro women boxing as well. They were a bit awkward when you sparred with them, but otherwise they were fine. But then moving to the UK, I didn't get that same welcome. So I stopped when I was really excited about a career, but I found it so hard to, one, kind of find a gym where you felt safe enough as well. That's something I wanted to ask. What can women, when we don't have the chance of learning from a young age, everything's okay. For the women kind of older, wanting to get into boxing and want to get their love back for boxing, what can they do to find places that feel safe that they can start?
I think just keep trying. Yeah. I think if you go into the first gym that you go in and you don't feel comfortable there or welcomed, there will be one. So, you know, either ask around or just keep trying, and don't let that put you off, because there will be a gym that's really welcoming women and you know, if anything, encouraging women to come in. So I would definitely keep going until you find one where you feel comfortable, because it's a brilliant sport to compete in, but only if you love it. The competition part isn't nice. It's not like, and I don't want to be rude to other sports, but, you know, something like tennis, you can kind of, I mean, it's tough at the top level, obviously, every single sport, no matter what you do, but what I mean, you can, like, go down to the local park and just enjoy playing a bit of tennis, and you hit it back and forward, even if you're rubbish, you can enjoy that, can't you? That'll be, you know, and it might not, like, really grip you, and you might not go, oh, I absolutely love this, but you might enjoy it. With boxing, that won't happen. You can't go in a gym. Like I say, with most of the sports, you can get the equipment and say to a friend, hey, let's go throw a baseball back and forward. Let's go play a bit of cricket. Yeah. Let's go kick a ball back and forth. Let's go and play, shoot some hoops or whatever. And you can, even if you don't really love it and you crap, what's going to happen? You bounce, laugh at each other. Well, you try this, and you're not going to do that with going, hey, let's put some boxing gloves on. Punch to the head. It's just not, it doesn't work like that. So I think you have to find the place that's right for you, and you don't have to compete. You can just do it for fitness. I run a class every week for a group of women, and we've got a few men come now, and they just absolutely love it. And there's something really good about punching a bag when you've had a tough day or whatever's going on. You're like, rah. It's brilliant for fitness. And always learning. So like with running, that's brilliant. Spin classes are brilliant. Once you can do it, you can do it. Whereas with boxing, every single week,
you're always learning.
You get footwork or a combination or whatever. So I think it's really good for you mentally and physically. So I'd just definitely say, keep trying to find a different gym or trainer until you find the one that's right for you.
I resorted to buying a bag and hanging it up in my attic. But you're right. Like, I love running. Running is great. Gets you out of your head. But there's nothing quite like needing to punch a bag and remembering you still need to breathe.
If you've got someone as well who can teach you, or you're learning, it feels great when you can feel yourself getting better at, like, whatever you do. You know what I mean? When you start, like, executing that technique better, it's a great feeling.
You really made me want to find a gym now. I want to get into it again. What's the last question I'll ask it and let you go after this? What's your hope for sport, I've asked this already, but coming out of COVID and people realizing sports is important, it's good for mental health, do you have any hopes or big goals for the next year?
Personally or for sport?
Personally and for sport, I think, yeah.
I think for sport, obviously, it's impactful on all different levels, isn't it? So I just hope that we, as a nation in our society, anyway, in Britain or England, UK, whichever one you want to use, I really just hope that we value grassroots sport and what it can do for people. You know, give schools the funding that they need to be able to provide quality equipment, quality facilities and quality coaching, either through teachers or outside groups that come in. I think we could be doing much better there, to provide opportunities in communities now, which we used to have, but now it's getting expensive to get your kids involved with sports clubs, and that's causing, you know, a gap now in those that are able to access those opportunities, and that shouldn't be, it just shouldn't be. And then of course at the top level for us to I'd love to see more coverage of women's sport, because that has a massive knock-on effect that's just endless. I have to say I'm pleased personally. I know a lot of people disagree with it, but I'm pleased that sport, or those involved with it anyway, are using their platform now for change. See, I don't see Black Lives Matter. You could talk about the movement itself and what's on their website and da-da-da-da, whatever people pick at bits, but the general, you know, concept, if that's the right way to put it, of Black Lives Mattering and making things better, that's brilliant. That shouldn't be called political. Yeah. That's just humanity. And it's great that sport has always been a brilliant catalyst for that. So I'm really pleased that we're seeing that now, athletes, male and female, white, black and everything else, speaking up and saying, this needs to be better, let's do better. Yeah. And they are very influential people. Mm. You've got massive influence, so why not use it for good? Yeah. And it's interesting how we've never ever seen a problem with athletes using that platform to promote stuff.
Yeah,
we've never had a problem with them having a beer sponsor. Jesus, I mean, I know we're not expecting them to be drinking it every night, but it's still, they're representing it. Exactly. We used to have cigarettes years ago, blazoned all across everybody. But you know, you can have betting shops encouraging gambling all over people. I mean, really, when you think about it, and that's the, you know, whether it's that or whether it's, you know, your energy drinks or clothing or sports, whatever, it's always been perfectly acceptable. Yeah. Really, does that stuff matter? And then they come out and say, let's make sure that this entire group of the human, you know what I mean? the human race are actually treated properly and fairly and all that. And we go, oh, I'm not sure athletes should be doing that.
It seems ridiculous when you make it so clear.
Talking about, it's absolutely a good thing. So I hope that sport takes notice, because sport needs to do loads better. Like the Olympics, I couldn't go to the Olympics because they don't have equal weight categories for women. Yeah. The Commonwealth Games is the same. The European Games is the same. That's not good enough. One of those rings should be taken off. Yeah. The equality ring. Unless you are 100%, should just have four rings for a bit until you're actually making sure everything's equal. Do you know what I mean? This is what I mean. The people use these excuses for too long. Oh, there's got to be so many people from each continent. Well, we didn't bother with that when it was, you know, we had like Eddie the Eel.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was one of the most popular, most loved athletes at the entire Olympics. Yeah. Or that, I don't actually know her name, but the lady who ran for Saudi, that was phenomenal. I don't know her name, sorry, but that was phenomenal. Yeah, she was miles behind, but that's what the Olympics is also supposed to be about humanity. So, yeah, I hope sport uses that for good, but definitely investment at the grassroots level and people, you know, having the opportunities to try stuff. And then there's all the nuances of barriers, isn't there? Like girls not being supposed to do stuff in case it makes them too muscly, or worrying about body image all the time, or boys worrying if people think that they're, you know, being girly if they try this sport or that sport. I just really hope we get rid of that eventually.
Ditto. And how about for yourself?
Within there's a fly that's like right in front of my eyes. I think for myself in sport, it's my job very much now, or my role is to pave the way. So there's the charity meaning of that, obviously, which is its own separate entity, or it will be more so as we go along. But then there's what pave the way means to me personally, and my role now that I'm most passionate about is trying to do that. So whether that's going speaking at schools, speaking in the media, whatever platform I've got, to inspire, to encourage, to be the role model I didn't have growing up, and to be part of sparking that social change. That's what matters to me. And it is amazing to have, you know, an England cap, to have the belts, to have trophies, whatever, that's a fantastic thing. But it doesn't compare to who I've become, you know, what I've experienced and what I can now try and do. So that has always been the greatest privilege to me, not just winning stuff, but what I can use that for to help others. So that's very much my massive passion and focus, and what I'll be dedicated to going forward more and more.
Thank you so much for talking. You've made me feel really inspired and happy, and your attitude is infectious.
Well, it's a pleasure, and thanks for what you're doing as well, because these things all, you know, it's not a, because people say loads, what's the one thing you do in women's sport? And I know why they ask it, and I get why they ask it, but it's like, that's like saying, what's the one vow you'd take in a wedding and expect to still be with that person 40 years later? There isn't one vow that you rely on. It's actually, if you're going to last and you're going to really get through it, it's day after day after day after day. Not just when things are going great, but when things are at the toughest, you know, and every day, you know, one day it might be about trust. Another day you might need to know they're there for you. Another day you might just need them to make you feel a bit special. The next day, you know, there's something every single day you have to work at. And it's exactly the same with any type of relationship, goals, progress, change, whatever, you name it. It's an ongoing commitment all of the time. Yeah. And one thing's going to do it. So the things you're doing, things I'm doing, the things that loads of other people are doing collectively is going to make that change happen. And that is the power these days. Yeah. There's a power shift. You know, previously it's often been top down. This is what's happening. You will all do it. Now, thanks to social media, one of the benefits of it is that people can galvanize, build communities, and go upwards and go, what are you all doing about this? I mean, and that's an incredible thing. And it's never been one voice. Me too. Black Lives Matter. Yeah. And one thing. There are a gazillion voices with a gazillion experiences approaching it in a gazillion ways. So some people have taken to Twitter and shared their story. Others have done entire documentaries on Netflix about individuals. Other people have gone through court and, you know, got justice. That whatever it is, it needs all of that to happen. So it's really important what you're doing as well. So thank you.
Another inspiring story, and just in time to take on a new weekend. If you want to share your story or join the Wild Adventures podcast community, make sure to look us up on our website, which is www.thewildadventurespodcast.com, Patreon, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Redbubble, all of which have links in the show notes. If you like what you heard on today's episode, then leave a review wherever you listen to podcast episodes, and help spread the stories. Till next time, my wonderful wildlings, I hope you have a fantastic weekend and you have plenty of adventures to share with us come Monday morning. Bye!